Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Studio Canal Presents podcast. My name is Simon Brew from Film Stories magazine, and this is a regular podcast celebrating one of the biggest and deepest film libraries in the world. Studio Canal's extensive library of over 6,000 films brings together cinema from around the globe. There are acclaimed international hits such as A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night and Pan's Labyrinth, gems you might have missed such as Blue Valentine and The Breadwinner, or how about a dash of sci-fi with Doctor Who and the Daleks or Terminator 2 Judgment Day? We're going to be doing our best to explore it all in this podcast. In this episode, we're celebrating the work of Spanish filmmaker Pedro Almodóvar, zeroing in on one or two films from his extensive filmography. I'm going to be joined by pop culture writer and critic Kayleigh Donaldson, who's also a huge fan of his work. Kayleigh, hello and welcome to Studio Canal Presents.
Hi, thanks for having me.
An absolute pleasure. Now, one of the things we like to ask our guests just before we get into the meat of a conversation is for a little film fact about themselves. Maybe the first film you ever remember seeing.
The very first film I ever remember seeing in a cinema was Disney's Aladdin. But the film I remember largely from my childhood is Home Alone, because for some reason, and I still have never figured out why, for some reason the end of that film made me bawl with tears as a child. I found it to be just the most tear-inducing thing ever. So my parents would occasionally, as a party trick, put the end of the film on to watch me do that. So that was my first huge emotional experience with a film, was watching the guy next door to Macaulay Culkin reunite with his granddaughter. So it may explain a lot about me psychologically today, but I don't want to look too into that.
Kayleigh, there is so much to unpack there. If Studio Canal ever pick up the rights to Home Alone, I'm getting you back on this podcast and we can get an hour out of that. We are here to talk about the brilliant Pedro Almodóvar. And just to get us going, for those new to him, can you tell us basically who he is and why you're such a fan of his work?
Pedro Almodóvar is probably the most famous director coming out of Spain right now and for the past 30 years. He's certainly the most famous currently working Spanish filmmaker to people outside of Spain. He's really known for making very Hollywood-inspired melodramas that tend to focus on the lives and concerns of women. He's famous for working largely with people like Penelope Cruz, Antonio Banderas, Carmen Maura, and Rosie De Palma. If you're a big fan of things like Joan Crawford melodramas from the 40s, you see those fingerprints all over his work today, even though he's made stuff as varied as films about drug-taking nuns, forced to gender transition surgery, air stewards losing their minds on a long flight, things like that. He covers such a wide variety of ideas, but he's now completely formed his own Almodovarian mould that I think is one of the most influential things to come out of Spanish cinema ever.
I mean, the first film I remember of his seeing was Matador with a very young Antonio Banderas. And I mean, my eyes were blinking as it was going on. I mean, it was mildly on the, how can I put it? It was mildly on the fruity side was my memory of that. And I think for those of us in the UK, when those early films were being promoted, that was an element that I think was slightly beefed up in the marketing conversation. But then I got to Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which is the first of the films we're going to talk about here. And there is so much to unpack there. So can you just set that particular film up for us?
Sure. I think Women on the Verge is largely considered his breakout film in America. It's the one that sort of cemented to people who Pedro Almodóvar was. It's a screwball comedy, drama, romance that focuses largely on a TV actress who dubs American films into Spanish. Her boyfriend has just broken up with her and she is on the verge of a nervous breakdown. But she is surrounded by a lot of women who are going through similarly weird things. There is a situation involving a woman who's accidentally been sleeping with a terrorist. Antonio Banderas is there because it's Antonio Banderas. He's in, I think, 8 of Almodóvar's films. He's one of his most constant collaborators. But it was, I think, The film that really made people realize that here is a filmmaker who has the potential to be something outside of the kind of underground. Because another thing about Almodóvar, his films are largely very queer. He is one of the most famous queer filmmakers working today.
So we are, 26, 27 episodes into Studio Canal Presents now. And one of the reliefs for me sometimes is someone else has to explain everything that goes on in the film rather than me. And never have I been more grateful than when you were halfway through that brilliant explanation of the movie. I was going to touch on his impact on queer cinema. One of the things that always struck me about his work was two things. Number one, he was in the mainstream in Spanish cinema, to my eyes, having these conversations. But also in the 1980s, when no one was really doing this, particularly in the mainstream as well. I just wonder, can you just talk to that just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the stuff that comes out before Women on the Verge. Women on the Verge comes out, I believe, 1988. Films come before that are things like Labyrinth of Passion and Dark Habits, which is the heroin nun movie,
yes.
And Matador with Antonio Banderas. This is a really tempestuous time in Spain. You have the fall of the Franco regime, you have the early beginnings of a kind of mainstream queer scene, and a lot of Almodóvar's work is not just about sexual freedom, it's about political freedom. It is just about the idea that those two things are completely intertwined. So you have these films that are often very candid in the way that they show sex. Like, that's another thing that really characterizes his films, is when people have sex in those films, they do it. There is absolutely no, you know, there's no cut to a waving curtain, there's no, like, slow jazz music playing to soften the moment. They are just, you know, it is raw, it is messy, it is, when we get to Kika, we'll talk about it, it is often very difficult to watch. But you think about what it must have been like to see a film like that after a period of intense political censorship at a time of intense homophobia. Not that that went away in Spain in the 80s, but certainly the nerve, I think, of Pedro is one of the things that's always made him stick around, even when he became more kind of mainstream and quote-unquote acceptable. You know, he's an Oscar winner now, he's won pretty much every major award in like European film festivals, he makes a lot of films that are probably more suited to a kind of like Sunday evening at your local matinee cinema kind of screening, and yet I don't think he's ever stopped being himself in that way. His films are still immensely queer. I think Parallel Mothers, his most recent feature, is a really interesting example of that, that it wasn't marketed as such, but it was so organically intertwined into the story that it was like, oh, of course this is happening.
I'm fascinated by the idea of what it would look like if he did cut away to a waving curtain in the middle of a fruity moment. I mean, presumably you'd get like Jean-Paul Gaultier in to design the curtain or something like that. There would be something about it.
I think he would cut to the curtain and then it would just go back to the sex. He just wants to look at that curtain.
Yeah, yeah, I'm bored with that now, and just like quickly shunt the camera the other way. Yeah, I love it.
Because that's another thing that defines a lot of his films, is just like the production design is stunning. Like Kika, the apartment that this woman lives in, is like if Gaultier designed a flat in Rear Window.
Oh, that's a great way to put it. That's a great... I mean, just contextually, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown as well, you mentioned before, it was the bit where he started to find real mainstream international recognition, really. But he was 38 by that stage. I went and worked this out and I put it through my very cheap calculator. And this was his seventh film. He'd done his raw guerrilla movies. He just started working for studios. I think it was just over the last one or two films beforehand. I mean, Women on the Verge of Nervous Breakdown, would you say it was almost like mixing that kind of guerrilla way of making a film with working within a studio system?
Yeah, you could sort of argue of it as being like a transition movie in that sense. I actually think you could probably make that case a little more with Kika, which has the polish of a guy who's been given a lot more money to make his story, but it has the story of something that you really make when you expect 17 people in an art house cinema, 16 of whom are related to you, to watch it. But definitely after Kika, I think you start to see a really big change in like, okay, I've made my transgressive films, now let's kind of see what I move on to. You get something like Live Flesh, which is an adaptation of a Ruth Rendell novel. You get All About My Mother, which I believe is really still considered his magnum opus by a lot of people. It's the one Almodóvar film on the Sight and Sound top 250. And then you get things like Talk to Her, which I believe is the film he wins his Oscar for. But you definitely see a kind of change. I almost compare it to when David Cronenberg stopped making films about people's jaws falling off and kind of went a bit more, still Cronenbergian, but a little more respectable. You know, I mean, so I think that's one of the reasons I was so interested to talk about Kika, is because I think on some level it was made for a larger audience, but I'm baffled that he thought he would get away with it.
I think it was All About My Mother and Talk To Her. I think he won Oscars for both of those. Because I started watching his films before he was, inverted commas, respectable. And I do remember that point where he was suddenly on the stage at the Academy Awards, and it was almost like there's a great big tick among the establishment that it's okay to like all of this now. But then I contrast that with this bit towards the end of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, where I counted 7 active characters in the middle of just like this mass scene of almost verbal carnage. I can't think of too many filmmakers around the globe able to pull that off, and also to know who the characters are.
Oh yeah, and I think it's one of the things that's always been really wonderful to me about Almodovar, is how much he loves his actors, particularly his actresses. I mean, a lot of Women on the Verge feels like a love letter to Carmen Maura, who was his muse for a very long time. I believe she's in about 7 or 8 of his films. But also, you know, people like Rosie De Palma, who I think has the greatest face in all of cinema, and he adores her, and he gives her these wonderful kind of occasionally barmy but also very glamorous women to play. You really see a difference between how women in his films are shot versus like how they would be if that film was made in America. I don't think you would get to see anywhere near the kind of unruliness that these women get to have, or just even, you know, the wife running around in that amazing pink coat with the gun on the back of the bike, which is just such a great screwball moment. It's a very screwball movie, actually. So is Kika, for better or worse, but you definitely see his Hollywood influences. You watch Women on the Verge and you see a ton of something like The Women by George Cukor, or Bringing Up Baby, just in the way that people are kind of like firing dialogue back and forth at one another, and how something completely bananas happens and you're just sort of like, well, yeah, of course that's happened. Of course the gazpacho is poisoned. Of course she's sleeping with a terrorist. Of course, you know, all of this is happening. I love that kind of, his controlled chaos is so thrilling to me. And I think that you see a lot less of that in some of the later films, where he does kind of get a little more, I don't even like saying respectable, because even something like Talk To Her, which he wins his Oscar for, that's about a guy who's raping a comatose woman and pretending to be her boyfriend. Like, that is not a mainstream concept. That is so dark and so upsetting. But he's never really lost that sense of, like, I'll take the soap opera-esque and make it emotionally resonant. Like, Parallel Mothers, his most recent feature film, features, like, a baby-swapping story and then, like, a spontaneous lesbian love story, but there's also set to the backdrop of people who disappeared during the Franco regime. And it works. Yeah. It shouldn't work. I imagine under another filmmaker, it would be disastrous. But maybe this is another thing that he's really honed his craft on as he's gotten kind of older and more into like America's good books, is that he has this ability to juggle tones so well, which is an interesting contrast to Kika, because I think the big criticism most people have of Kika is that he doesn't juggle the tone very well, and it makes people very uncomfortable.
I do want to just touch briefly on something you've said about the love of Hollywood, the love of early Hollywood, because going back to Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, just one more second, the colour scheme of it is leaning so heavily into the artifice of film. Can you talk about that just a little bit? I mean, I've watched Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown now a couple of times, and it's just like the better the telly I've got over the years that I've watched it on, the brighter the colours are just beaming out of the screen at me.
Yeah, it's Douglas Sirk-esque saturation of the screen, the idea that if the emotions are going to be big, then why shouldn't everything else kind of be big? And it's not that the acting is necessarily huge. Actually, like, Carmen Maura is extremely restrained. She is sort of the ultimate straight woman in this film, where she is surrounded by lunatics. But I think that sense of like watching yourself fall apart, that sense that you know that you have no control over everything and you're trying desperately to stay above water, feels very fitting in a world where all of the reds are incredibly red, where the wife has this blonde wig that is, if it's not made of plastic, it might as well be, with her incredible apartment overlooking this obviously fake-looking version of Madrid. I was in Madrid in May, and I spent a long time walking around looking for Almodovar sets.
It's a very blue sky, isn't it, in the background of that apartment?
Yeah, it is that way of like old Hollywood films. This is a studio set, or when people drive, it's like backshot and things like that. There is the sense that this is a real world to these characters, but it's not supposed to be a real world to us.
Yeah. And so you might have heard of a film called Kika. I've spotted you might be rather fond of this one. So can you just set Kika up for us then? Because you've implied already this is a trickier film in a few respects.
Yeah. So the lead character, Kika, is this very naive, optimistic cosmetologist who ends up in a relationship with a young man named Ramon, who is dealing with the suicide of his mother, and he has a very tempestuous relationship with his stepfather, Nicholas, who is an American who writes novels that seem weirdly autobiographical. But Kika is also having an affair with Nicholas. And this is set to the backdrop of a television show hosted by a lunatic called Andrea Scarface, in which she is essentially doing the Spanish version of Faces of Death, where she shows footage of people getting murdered or being injured. Footage of the macabre, basically the kind of progenitor yeah. to disgusting stuff you find on YouTube.
Now, I dug out a press release for when Kika arrived on DVD in the UK just nearly 10 years ago. And it talks, I mean, it's interesting that press releases generally tend to be quite celebratory and upbeat. And this talked in the opening sentence about how this is the film that, quote, was most harshly treated by critics on release, yet it's one that benefits the most from reviewing and reassessment. Would you agree with that?
I think it is usually considered one of the lower tier Almodovars, and because it, even by his standards, it's very controversial, a lot of people tend to avoid it. I actually have the DVD of this as well, and it comes with, on the, yeah. even on the back of the DVD, it does say, you know, attracting controversy because of the scene in which Almodovar depicts Kika's rape with humorous detachment. I mean, you've got to give yeah. them credit for at least telling people what they're getting, but in terms of the things I talked about earlier, what I think Almodovar is very good at, like the juggling of tones, I think you see him really pushing the boundary as far as he ever had with Kika, and it is debatable yeah. as to whether or not he succeeded. The character of Kika is repeatedly raped by this madman who is the subject of this TV show that is sort of attracting controversy around Spain at the same time. But the scene is almost shot like slapstick. It is a very odd scene in that Kika starts to like get bored and tell him to finish up early because she has things to do. The police barge in and have to pull them apart like they're Looney Tunes. And then he masturbates over the balcony and it lands on a woman's face. And this is all shot in that way of, huh, this is happening. Isn't this kind of weird? Which, to Almodovar's credit, in fairness, it is a film about how we have become sort of numbed to the true trauma of human sensation through things yeah. like this television show, this women's show. It's like the first thing we see on this TV show is a woman being murdered at the graveside of her daughter. And that seems to have been inspired by a real life event which happened in America in the early 90s. That did happen. A woman was gunned down by her husband when she went to visit her daughter's grave. There's a scene where we see devotees of a particular saint engaging in like ritualistic self-flagellation and cutting of themselves. And I have no idea if that's real or not, but it looks super real. If that ends up being news footage, I wouldn't be surprised. And it builds to this yeah. idea that because when after Kika is raped, the footage of it is on this television show. Andrea barges into her house and demands an interview and says, "Your behavior attacks freedom of expression." It is all content to them, to use a very modern term. I get that. Yeah. And in some ways, I think that's very nervy. I kind of respect the challenge that Almodovar gave him, but he's also making it in the context of a genre where rape as a plot device or rape as a shock device against women is horribly common and deeply offensive. So I was looking at reviews of this on Letterboxd, and it was a very sharp divide between, this is a very brave film by Almodovar, to, I think this is awful and I don't think he should have made it. And I get both sides of it. I waver yeah. myself. There's a lot of this on my love, but when it comes to that scene, I was sitting on my couch and I was kind of cringing. I had my knees up by my face and was like, this goes on for so long as yeah. well. That's the thing.
I mean, 3 decades later, it's telling people don't quite know how to process it.
Yeah, I think at least it is interesting that they put that on the box, because I think it is the thing that people still talk about with the film. It is the thing that people are afraid to watch. I mean, when we were I was talking about Almodovar with some friends recently. A friend of mine is watching a lot of his films for the first time. And I was like, well, she asked, where do you start? And I was like, okay, we'll start with like the major ones, like start with Talk to Her, start with Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. And it's not that necessarily there's stuff in that film, those films that are easy. Like, again, Talk to Her is all about rape, yeah. but tonally, but stylistically, it's a totally different thing. You are not encouraged to laugh at it. And in Kika, you are supposed to laugh about the fact that this poor woman who is being brutalized is wanting him to hurry up because she's bored. And, you know, it's a big ask to to get an audience on your side with that. I think that, and maybe at this point in time, you see Almodovar realizing even he has limits, because after he does Kika, you see him pull back a little. He does the Flower of My Secret, he does Live Flesh, and Live Flesh is pretty sexual, but it's all consensual. And then he does All About My Mother, which is almost quaint by comparison.
You touched on something there as well about him zeroing in on television. And really reality television. I think it's often seen that I think The Truman Show really was the first film to properly examine reality TV. But that followed like 5 years after Kika. Whereas with Kika, I mean, the whole capturing reality television so far ahead of anyone else, the foresight of it's extraordinary.
Yeah, I think if there's any reason to watch Kika, if you are on the fence, I really do think that it's prescient nature in tackling not even just reality TV, but I think like the contentification of everything, which we talk about a lot now in the era of like social media and influencer culture, and this idea that everyone's life is something that can be packaged and sold, whether it's, you know, your house can be an Airbnb, your car can be an Uber. So in this situation where Andrea Scarface, who is dressed entirely in Gaultier and like the most incredible over-the-top outfits, is conducting this TV show that she sees as, at least she presents to her audience as being like an act of integrity, an act of honesty. You know, this is what the world is like, and we're going to show it to you, and we're going to be so brave in revealing the darkest crevices of humanity. But it's all pure exploitation. Everything is content. But it's not just for her. This is a film full of weird voyeurs. This is a film where Nicholas, the writer, is essentially using his own horrifying, violent, misogynistic life as fodder for his own novels. Everyone seems to be really doing it, except for Kika. And the consequence of that is that her trauma is not good content for Andrea's TV show. It is not good entertainment for anyone. It is the thing that she has to suffer with herself. And I do think that, to the credit of Almodovar, the aftermath of the situation is horrifying for her. And it is shown as such. That's not a joke. You're not supposed to be desensitized to that. But also, there's no money in that, at least. At this point in time, I imagine if it was now, you would probably see her being chased around with more cameras and people like tabloiding her life almost. But it is interesting to see a film like this being made in 1993, because like what we know is reality TV, I think, in Britain really gets cemented with Big Brother, and that doesn't happen until, what, 98, 99? Like, towards the end of the decade, certainly. So, and frankly, content like this does exist. I mean, Faces of Death and those like Mondo movies were a couple decades before Kika, but there are entire YouTube channels where you can watch people die. You can watch the actual shooting that inspired that kind of first scene on YouTube. That's all just available at the click of a finger. And frankly, most people are desensitized to it. I think there's a whole generation of people raised on true crime for whom none of this makes them even bat an eyelash.
You touched on your friend who's just getting into the work of Pedro Almodovar. I'm just curious, if you can just briefly, just like, how would you introduce just some of the really early stuff? How would you introduce like Labyrinth of Passion and Dark Habits and What Have I Done to Deserve This? Law of Desire, films like that. Would you direct people that way?
It's maybe more accessible to start with the glossier stuff, the things that had, you know, good cameras and where he really knows who he is. If you like that, if you like 100% Almodovar, then you kind of branch out. Like, it is a process. And I think that's the exciting thing about discovering a filmmaker, is you get to go deeper into their psyche. You get to go deeper into watching them figure out who they are and find the tools, find the actors, get better at these things. So I don't think my friend's ready for Kika yet, but I actually own all of Almodovar's films. That was my lockdown project, a lot of eBay bidding. So, you know, it's there for when she wants it, but I think she's watching. She watched Pain and Glory quite recently, and she really loved that. So I'm not sure where she wants to go next. I will have to find one for her.
Finally on Pedro Almodovar, what would you say happened when the rest of the world seemed to notice him? We talked about Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown being this transitional film in his career just because he was noticed at that point. How did that affect his work, say, in the 10 years afterwards leading up to All About My Mother?
With a lot of non-American, non-English filmmakers, you do get the sense that the industry sees him as like the representative of the entire country. Like when Parasite became a phenomenon, I remember seeing posts like, if you liked this, watch these other Korean films. And it's, you know, a whole slew of things that really have nothing in common with Parasite. It would be like, a friend of mine said, it would be like saying, hey, you really liked watching The Godfather, here's other American films, and you have like the Transformers films on the list, you know. It's really easy to reduce a nation and its incredible array of cinema and art and so on to the eyes of like a handful of films that you can get on DVD in this country, you know. But with Almodovar, I think just because a lot of his work is so Hollywood in its inspirations, and films that are like women's melodramas, films that are interested in the internal lives of just really strange people. So after Women on the Verge, you see him working with those faces that you see a lot that are very familiar to us. Like Antonio Banderas starts to break out in the late 80s, early 90s. There's a moment in Truth or Dare, the Madonna documentary, where she's hitting on Antonio Banderas and she describes him as the guy from the Almodovar movies. So that's how figures like him break out. Figures like Javier Bardem, who's in Live Flesh, Penelope Cruz, who's in many of his films. But you see him honing his craft more, as you want with any filmmaker. You see him sort of pushing himself, but also refining what it means to be him. So by the time you get to his most recent feature film, Parallel Mothers, there's so many things that we just now define as the Almodovar-esque. And I think it's going to be so interesting to see his new film, The Room Next Door, which comes out, I'm seeing it hopefully at Toronto next month, because it's his first feature film in English. Like, does everything he is so wonderful at translate to a language that is not his first language? Does it translate to working with people like Tilda Swinton and Julianne Moore? Does his Hollywood sensibility translated through a queer Spanish lens work when he puts it back into Hollywood? I'm cautiously optimistic, even though I was not really a fan of his short Strange Way of Life with Pedro Pascal and Ethan Hawke. I am still concerned. There are so many of my favorite filmmakers who then start working in English, and it's like, oh, yeah, that didn't work as well. So I'm excited because I will follow Pedro anywhere. But it's exciting to have someone who's still challenging me and who's still making things that I can't guess. There are very few filmmakers like that working for me now. And we have to treasure them while we have them. He's now in his 70s, and I want him to keep making films like until he's like Frederick Wiseman's age, you know, keep going.
Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown and Kika are both available on the Studio Canal Presents channel, as well as available on DVD and Blu-ray. Kaylee, before we let you go, we do ask of our guests for a double bill from the Studio Canal catalogue.
So my double bill is Mulholland Drive, directed by David Lynch, and Mask of the Red Death by the late, great Roger Corman. They're actually two films that are both in my Letterboxd top 100. I think it's top 150 films now. I keep adding to it. I can't stop. I'm a sucker for films about people or communities or groups of people who slowly descend into oblivion or slowly succumb to like the rot of their own evils and psyche. And Mulholland Drive, I think, is one of the great Hollywood films. It's basically David Lynch's Sunset Boulevard. It is a film about kind of corrupting force of this horrifying city of dreams. Yeah. And then Mask of the Red Death, the adaptation of the Edgar Allan Poe story, is about a group of deviant aristocrats who think that they can bypass the suffering of the plebeians by avoiding the Black Plague via a party and realizing that actually they have doomed themselves. I don't know if Corman was ever an influence for Lynch. He was an influence on basically every other filmmaker in America, so maybe. But these stories of intense privilege sinking into the ruins of our own humanity, I'm sort of obsessed with stuff like that. And I think these two films do it so well. They both feel like you're stuck in a kind of strange nightmare you can't figure out either. So maybe not a double bill to do if you're not totally sober, but otherwise, give it a go.
I've now got a much clearer idea why you cried at the end of Home Alone. This has been an... Kaylee Donaldson, this has been an absolute delight. Both Mulholland Drive and Mask of the Red Death are available on the Studio Canal Presents channel. Kaylee Donaldson, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Mulholland Drive, Mask of the Red Death, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown and Kika are all available on the Studio Canal Presents channel on Prime Video, Apple TV Plus and ITVX. Now it's time for our regular news update from the world of Studio Canal. Let's start in the cinema. The Apprentice, the much-talked-about movie exploring the life of Donald Trump in the 1980s, has been confirmed for UK cinema release on 18th of October. Ali Abassi directs, with Sebastian Stan taking on the role of Trump. The film debuted earlier this year to acclaim at the Cannes Film Festival. Looking ahead to next year, on the 1st of January 2025, Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield headline We Live in Time. Written by Nick Payne and directed by John Crowley, it's a romance that covers several decades in the life of its characters, and it's all set to get 2025 off to a very good start. Heading to home formats, 1954's take on J.B. Priestley's An Inspector Calls is celebrating its 70th anniversary in style. The film adaptation, starring Alistair Sim and directed by Guy Hamilton, is coming to 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray for the first time. It'll also be available on Blu-ray, DVD and digital platforms from the 7th of October. I'll be back soon with the next episode of Studio Canal Presents. Until the next time, to get all the news on Studio Canal films as it happens, and to find out more about the ITVX, Apple TV and Prime Video channels, you can visit www.studiocanal.co.uk or follow Studio Canal at Studio Canal UK on X, Instagram and TikTok. And coming soon, well, we've got something a little bit different coming your way for a future episode. Two clues. We might be mentioning Antonio Banderas again, and there might be some marmalade sandwiches. Until then, ta-ta for now.